Hello and welcome to the final episode of Season 2 of Inside the Therapy Room. I'm your host, Sam Sellers. I'm a registered therapist, a wife and a fur mama, and I'm passionate about breaking down the barriers and stigma attached to therapy. I want to begin by first honouring the traditional custodians of the land we live and work on. Today, Noola is on the land of the Wangal peoples of the Eora Nation, and Sam is on Gundungurra land. We pay our respects to the elders past, present and emerging, for they hold the memories, the traditions and cultures of our First Nations people. We must always remember that the land below our feet is, was and always will be Aboriginal land. Today I am chatting to Noola Diamantopoulos. Noola has a deep sensitivity and brings an undivided attention to removing the effect of emotional neglect on human lives, an effect which stops us from knowing who we are. She is a Sydney-based psychotherapist. She works with clients who have experienced complex PTSD, trains other therapists in the psychotherapeutic modality brain spotting, and champions the role of creative and expressive arts in healing. She is the founder of both Brain Spotting Training Hub and Because Movement, and is the author of You Are, That Is, Creative. Today's episode is all about brain spotting. This is the last episode of Inside the Therapy Room. Whilst I will never rule out future episodes, I am currently shifting my attention and focus to other areas, including my work with religious trauma and my other podcast, Beyond the Surface. We hope you enjoy joining us for the last time inside the therapy room. Welcome, Noola. Thanks for joining me.
Hey, Sam. It's lovely to be here. It really is.
I'm really, really excited about this episode because I didn't even know about this modality until probably 8 or 10 months ago. Never heard of it. And it's going to go back to a question that I want to ask you a little bit later. Sure. But let's start with what is brain spotting?
Yeah, that's it's so challenging, I think, for any kind of modality to be able to nutshell it, right? So in a nutshell. Yeah, not quite. So maybe I can tell you a little bit about how it was developed, which is by the founder, David Grand. And David Grand was an EMDR trainer. Mm-hmm. He was trained by Shapiro. And during one of his sessions when he was doing his, well, he had actually moved off a little bit of the way to do EMDR. He's a very curious, he's got a lot of curiosity, David, and he's a phenomenal therapist himself. Anyway, and he was doing his version of EMDR, so he'd moved on from being a trainer. And what he discovered with one of his clients was that there was these eye movements, right, that you cannot do, like if you saw somebody do it, could not repeat. So it was something autonomic that had occurred, you know, this kind of flickering thing.
Yep.
He intuitively stopped on that. For people who know EMDR, it is bilateral stimulation of the eyes moving backwards and forwards here. And he stopped that movement.
Mm.
And what occurred was in the next 10 minutes of this young client of David's, there was an outpouring of things that wasn't even in her own awareness of her trauma. She was an ice skater and she couldn't do the triple loop. Anyway, needless to say, what happened after that was that she was able to do the triple loop, right?
Right.
A whole bunch of things got resolved. David got really curious. He talked about it to his colleagues. They all experimented with it. And where we are with it now, because that's back in 2003, so it's like 20 years now, right? And there's been a number of medical hypothesis reports done on it. We have a neuroscientist in Europe who's doing work on it. We've got a lot of people doing some research globally around brain spotting. But what happens is that, I think you can see me doing it now, that as I'm talking to you, my eyes are moving in different places. Yeah. When we're talking about something that is an issue, right, and we become activated. So the activation will be, let's say, I don't know, a tightening in the chest, a shallow breathing or something. We find a location that is associated to that somatic experience in the client's field of vision. And they do what we call mindful focusing, right? And then things happen, right? Things happen. The most beautiful thing about brain spotting is that you don't even need to talk about your issue. You don't have to go through it again. And you know too that with some clients, they do want the witnessing because you may be the first person ever that they're going to reveal everything to because they've been hiding the secret. But of course, they're free to do that. But for many people, it's like, no, go then. They don't have to, right? So that's one of the beautiful things. The other beautiful thing about brain spotting, so in other words, it's very gentle, very gentle process. It is big, big, big. I can't say it often enough on attunement. Big on attunement. So, Dan Siegel's work, for example, and many others who talk about, the neurobiology of attunement. Heart Math Organization, for example, that talks about our electromagnetic field from our heart space, all researched, right? This is what, as a therapist, this is what we call on, for lack of a better word, and what we bring while our client is processing, because they've gone subcortical. What they've accessed is no more, it's not in your new brain. We've gone, they've gone very deeply down. So what we're hitting is the innate healing capacity of an individual to heal, because there's two functions of the brain. First of all, it's our survival. We know that really well through our nervous system and what it does, how it takes over. And the second one is healing. It's there. When something is not in a homeostatic state, and we've discovered it, and I'm talking now, I'm just going to use a term called a trauma capsule. It's a term coined by Dr. Skaya, who's an advocate for brain spotting, passed away recently. Anyway, what happens is that when that eye position lock up, you've got the somatic marker, you've got the issue, the somatic marker. That's what we drop the issue after that. We work somatically. And with a location in the person's field of vision, you're now dropping down to the subcortical area of your brain to where that trauma capsule, just using that as a metaphor, is located. And then the brain checks in and goes, this is stuck. Homeostasis says you can't be stuck. So it does, it knows what to do now that we've got mindful focusing in place. It knows what the brain knows what to do. And I cannot, I'm so enthusiastic. I love brain spotting so much, right? And what it, and I can say so many things about it, but I'll take a little pause so maybe we can talk.
I mean, what I'm hearing is that bottom up approach as opposed to a top down approach. And so, but for people who don't know what that is, what is that bottom up approach? Because I found that that is the most effective way in particular to deal with trauma.
Absolutely. As much as CBT is, chair-led in the community, and it has a place. There's no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it. It cannot resolve trauma. Trauma's in the body. It's in the body, and unless you access the body, so whether we're talking somatic types of modalities like, somatic experiencing, sensory motor, HACOMI, integrated, somatic psychology, all of these different types of pure kind of somatic processes. Unless you're going through the body, which is then you're hitting directly the areas of the body that are storing, if you like, the trauma. You're not going to get anywhere with resolving it. You can get to some agency with talking. people some agency with that, teaching them, if you know, in a phased approach to trauma, you know, you got phase one is safety and stabilization, right? So teaching people to how to they can how they can manage their nervous system, yeah, for sure. But also, let's not make this a blaming thing, because you know very well that once someone becomes dysregulated, the prefrontal cortex is offline.
Yes.
Sayonara. Mm-hmm. And then when we come into some, unfortunately, some of my clients have said to me that they have tried these techniques, but that they, but that their therapist has blamed them for not being able to put them. I know. They said, well, I gave you the skills and you need to use them. And I know. It still happens to this day. I can't. I don't expect, and I hope that this is the case. I'm kind of a positive thinker here. That it doesn't happen that often, but it still happens to this day.
Yeah.
That people are experiencing this thing, which means that there are therapists out there who are not trauma-informed. Prefrontal cortex, offline. That means you cannot think clearly, you cannot be creative, you can't remember what to do. Even if you put things, as they suggest, on the back of your door, on your phone, on your, forget it.
Mm-hmm.
Forget it, it's not going to work. So talking, yes, it can help, it can bring a bit of meaning, it can bring some understanding, it can bring some hope, it can bring some support, definitely.
Yeah.
Some agency through the techniques and tools that we have to share with our clients, but to resolve trauma, no.
Yeah.
No. It just can't get there.
Can't
do it cognitively.
Yeah.
You've got to go subcortical.
And I mean, you sort of referenced it a little bit ago, which is that our body and our brain intrinsically knows what it's doing anyway. We just need to access it, right?
Yeah, we just need to access it. Exactly. Yeah. Body knows how to heal physical, you know, short of some things that need surgery. But you know what I'm saying. It's like it's doing that automatically for us at all times. You know, our breathing, for example, our heart rate, our body temperature, our digestion, it's doing all of that, you know? Mm-hmm. And it, when it comes to the trauma that a person is really hostage to, you know, and being able to access that and then allow for the processing to take place, this is the beautiful thing about brain spotting. There are other modalities, of course, that are doing this as well, but the significant difference with brain spotting is its gentleness. It is relational. It is client led.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're not the experts.
It almost sounds like that the client is not really the expert either. The body is the expert.
The body is, and the way we work is collaboratively. So we become a team. It's like, you know, even though I've just said that we're not the expert, we have expertise, right? And so does the client, especially once we liberate that for the client to be able for themselves to realize that they do have that. Because at the moment, they, as you know, some people feel that there's something wrong with them. Come into your, you know, practice, you know, and it's like, well, there's nothing wrong with you. You survived. These are survival adaptations, you know. But let's talk about that. So we go through all of that. But when they start, and then realizing too that let's explore how you were able to do that as well. And it's usually dormant. They go through some stuff, but they're not aware of it. Making what implicitly took place, their survival capacity, explicit. Now we're powerhousing them.
Yeah.
And then together, that's now becomes their expertise. And together with my expertise, we become, you know, collaborators. And we become very creative in that process.
Mm-hmm.
Love that part also with respect of brain spotting. So, you know, brain spotting talks in the language of setups, for example, not protocols.
Okay.
Big difference. Big difference. And David Grant will say that, you know, whenever we're working with a client and we're doing brain spotting, you drop everything, but you never drop your attunement. Drop everything, but never drop your attunement.
Yeah. It sounds like it would almost integrate really well with other therapeutic approaches.
Oh, you are a Sam. You're a genius. The other beautiful thing, you to have picked that up. The other beautiful thing, and probably one of the earlier things that when I discovered brain spotting that I fell in love with, it's integrative with, it's standalone, but it's integrative. You want to work ego states, parts work, you want to work cognitively, you know, as well. You want to work somatically, you want to work, you want whatever, doesn't really matter, whatever it is that you do. Expressive arts, beautiful, right? I do a lot of parts work as well, and I love doing expressive arts too. So they're kind of my go-to places. You know, there is no one way to heal a person. There is no one universal way. We need a lot of tools in our toolkit. And a must one for me for therapists is brain spotting, as is a somatic-based one, as is a parts-based one. You've got to have them in your toolkit.
What led you to work in this space? How did you land here?
I was EMDR trained, right, and I was doing EMDR, and very quickly became a I was also moving off it too because I'm a relational therapist, so it was like it was becoming a little bit mechanical. And I know, you know, EMDR is brilliant. I understand that. But to do it in the classic way,
yeah,
it's a bit, it's tough, right? Yeah. There is another school now of thought that's kind of moved off that. and that's probably, I like that is growing in its own way, in its own unique way. But when I discovered brain spotting, it was immediate, Sam. I discovered it on some place like Pezzi or something.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Right, really bizarre. And I immediately was like, because David had some of his trainings up there. I might have got the organization wrong. But anyway, I went to that, and it was mine. I knew it was mine. I knew that this was the... it was the grout, everything that was going to pull everything together, everything, right? Philosophically speaking, methodologically speaking. And we use a pointer in brain spotting, and a pointer that this is one of, I know that your viewers can't hear this, but this is, I've got one with it. Like, yeah, a pom-pom. So, you know, it's like, I didn't have a pointer, so I went to a $2 shop and I bought a back scratcher.
Oh, yeah.
The pointers extend, the back scratcher extends, and I took the scratcher off it and put something else on top of that, and that became my pointer, and I began straight away. I started before I started my training. That was how organic and beautiful it is. Of course, it was never going to be enough. You have to do the training, you know. And now I'm a trainer in brain spotting for our region.
Yeah.
And I couldn't be happier because it's taken me on even a deeper journey with brain spotting and the phenomena that brain spotting is and how I can integrate it with so many other modalities as well.
Yeah.
Mm.
How have you seen its power in the people that you've worked with?
So my body just reacted to that question, right? Because it's very moving.
Yeah.
Very moving, Sam. When I am blessed to be able to witness the transformations that take place, you know. And it's not me, you know, it's just what we're able to access for another person. I work with a clientele base called dissociative identity. I don't like the term disorder in DSM-5, so it's an adaptation. And especially for that population, for people who don't know what dissociative identity is, it used to be called multiple personalities. There's a lot to juggle.
Yeah.
Those people, you know. and brain spotting, for example, because it is so intense, it can be so intense that for some of my clients, I would only spend maybe 5 seconds of brain spotting.
Wow.
5 seconds. And then to see them grow from that 5 seconds, right, into overcoming some of the most significant obstacles. You know, there's still a long way to go. It's not, these are not 5 minute exercises with people who've got, because there's a lot of other comorbidity that goes with it, a lot of other issues. It's not just the parts work, you know. And to see them, you know, flourishing in life, you know, and living the best way that they can, happily, being living a life meaningfully, you know.
Yeah.
The brain spotting also works on other, you know, not only is it a trauma for trauma people who've experienced that, but it's also for addictions, performance, for creatives, for we also have a, because the brain spotting is both an activation model. In other words, we're not scared of activation, you know, so long as the person's in their window of tolerance, we're not into abreaction. Yeah, but we don't get scared about, oh, they're getting a little bit too high. It's like we ask a question, is it tolerable?
Yeah.
And we just keep going, right? But it's also resourcing. And it's also expansive. So we can go to expansion brain spotting, which is the growth part.
Right.
And so for me, I love working in all ways with my clients, not just going for the kind of target trauma issues. So working with positive neurocircuitry, working with resourcing, as well as then dipping into the into the trauma so that they've got more capacity. Yeah. Yeah.
Is there anyone that this would not work for?
Yes, there could be. So what's coming to my imagination is, and probably not only for brain spotting, but it depends on the motivation of a person to heal.
Yeah,
that's number one. That's standard, I think, for any kind of modality. You know, how much do you really want it, or have you come so that you can get fixed by somebody else?
Yes, I know those people.
Right. So that could be challenging for those people because, you know, we're asking them to do something that they're like, it's not quick fix enough or whatever.
Yeah.
There are definitely challenging clients that any kind of modality would be challenged with. I'm thinking about attachment issues, right? And that relies more on you as a therapist developing and being the model of a relationship, of a healing relationship, of how relationships should be for healing, right? But because brain spotting interweaves with so many different approaches, then no, there is nothing that says don't do it with this type of person. Okay, I've introduced dissociative identity. You need to work within your capacity. So if you don't have extra training for dissociative identity, then don't do anything.
Yeah.
Refer them. Don't do brain spotting. Don't do anything.
Yeah.
That's not good. So, and I've got people who work with brain spotting within their within a more limited capacity even, right? So you can do it that way too. So it doesn't have to, it's not as if you're going to do brain spotting and all of a sudden you've opened a can of worms.
Yeah.
And they don't know how to deal with it. But you learn how to work with it within your capacity of whatever it is that you may be working with that's presenting in front of you. Plus, hopefully, as a trauma-informed therapist, you know how to work with the person who becomes dysregulated.
Yes.
And then that's your feedback. That's your phenomenological research being done right in front of you in your presence. You know, to learn that, you know, more things about the client, because all information like this is informs us. and more and more about our client. So to me, it's more about learning the individual and less about the label.
I love that. I hate labels. Throw the label maker out. That's my motto. Throw the label maker out.
There was somebody, I can't remember his name, some famous person who said, once you label me, you negate me. Which you do. The you of you is negated because now you become this.
Yes. Yeah.
No.
Mm.
No. It's useful to be able to describe perhaps a number of clusters of symptoms that a person is experiencing, but even then I'm going to still be curious. Tell me how you're experiencing this. Anxiety. You have anxiety, so tell me how you know anxiety. Well, I know my anxiety,
yeah,
but what's yours look like?
Yeah
You know? So anyway,
okay, the question that I really wanted to ask you in this episode is, and I am sort of, it's coming from me, but it's also coming from, I guess, things that I see other people writing and talking about in the therapy world, which is there are a few modalities that are very recognizable in terms of particularly trauma therapy. And so you've already mentioned one of them, which is EMDR.
Yes.
But my question is, how is brain spotting stacking up against things like EMDR and internal family systems and, you know, parts work, all of those sorts of things?
Well, the only real evidence-based modalities that we have is EMDR, because Shapiro was very tough for 30 years, right?
Mm.
And what are we saying when we're talking about, you know, something being, and CBT is the other one, just to finish my sentence, because IFS hasn't got any evidence base behind it, right? The way that it's evidence informed, right?
Yes, that's very important to note. Yes.
No others have that. So, you know, when we look at evidence-based, we're looking at the medical model as to what it is that they're going to back, because it is an evidence-driven society that we live in. We want to keep our people safe, this, that, and the other. But what are we talking about when we talk about evidence? What, there are so many different types of evidences.
Yes.
I don't even know if that's a word, but it doesn't matter. I just made
it's all right. It's a word now.
It's a word now. And the kind of evidence that we're talking about here is something that is predictable and repeatable.
Mm.
Right? Suggesting that this is going to work on all people.
Mm-hmm.
Really? Really?
Mm-hmm.
You only need to find one case where something that is evidence-based didn't work. And there goes the evidence on that one.
Yeah. Yep.
And anyway, I'm not going to go into that too much because I can get on a soapbox on this one. But we have forgotten too that we also have evidence, which is the person who sits in front of us, right? That is our phenomenological evidence. We get our feedback, we observe, we notice, they tell us what's going on. That is live evidence.
Yeah.
You can't get better than that. I don't need a book to tell me, you know, whether something is working or something isn't working. The therapeutic relationship is the most powerful force that we have in healing. Forget even the modalities.
Yeah.
So if we don't have that, and that's been researched, just to throw that word in, that is the biggest thing that has been researched, and it's shown time and time again.
Yeah. You
know, about the therapeutic alliance. And if you don't have that, then you could be the best you know, therapist in any form of modality. But if you don't have that, that's gonna go flat.
Yeah.
Clients will work with me and they will, there is enough, I will say the word guarded trust. Because there's no such thing for me to trust. Don't trust me.
Yeah.
We've got to work together, you know, and be more curious and, you know, just instill curiosity. How about we try this? You're up for an experiment, you know? Yeah, let's give it a go. And to ask questions, they are so much more powerful than answers.
Yeah.
I don't think we dig enough. You know, somebody says something, we take it at face value. No, question it. Question it further. IFS does that. They take it further and further, you know. Well, not as much as Janine. I'm showing my biases now. Janina Fisher.
Yeah.
Because I'm a big quester. I'm big on the power of questions, inciting new ideas, new ways of exploring something, and coming to a place where, oh my goodness, I never realized this before. No answer was given, just questions.
Yeah.
You know, even that when somebody comes in and says, you know, I'm scared about XYZ. So what happens when you're scared about XYZ? Well, it's not good, but what is it that's not good about it? Really keeping on going deeper and deeper and deeper until you get to what? The wound.
Yeah.
The actual wound, what's actually hurting, and not some social construct of, you know, that we've, you know, accepted, adopted, whatever.
I would agree. My clients will sometimes say, I'm so sick of you asking me why.
Right.
Because I'll just go, well, why though? And it is just to try, and I love that digging. Like, it's just keep digging, just keep digging. Yeah. And I think instinctively, the client will know when we have dug enough.
Absolutely. You'll get to that place.
I won't know that automatically, but they will.
There's something I do with my clients when it comes to questions. I have this because as an artist, I have a performance art piece that's called Quest.
Yeah.
Quest is a written dialogue done in silence of questions only. I have got thousands of them documented, right? And I did a little research on it and still continue to this day to get asked to bring this to different venues and corporates as well and all sorts of things. So, you know, it could be something like somebody, because it's in silence, there's no talking. Mm-hmm. You have to write it down so there's a commitment. It gets passed to you, right? And then you look at the question. The question now becomes yours. You've got to make sense of it, right? And you're having a dialogue. It's not a brainstorm. You're having a dialogue and you're responding to that question with another question. So, for example, you know, somebody once asked me, their first question was, how are you?
Yeah.
So I wrote back and said, why do you care?
I love that.
And they wrote back some other question along the lines of, you know, isn't it something or other about being polite?
You know?
And I said, is polite the same as authentic?
Yeah. So
four questions in, right, and we're bang.
Yeah. Yeah. The depth. So, I love the depth. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Exactly. So Quest, right? Mm-hmm. Questing is one of my powerhouses I'll do that. I mean, I can do it, you know, verbally, but when you take the tone away, like no voice, when you're writing, it becomes more mindful. So there is the process of reflection that is taking place.
Yeah.
As well. And it's something that we have not been taught how to reflect. We don't, it's not a natural thing for us to reflect. Mm. We act based on our, you know, whatever experiences, beliefs, this, that, and the other, but we have not been taught to reflect. So just that's why, you know, journaling and stuff is very powerful. And something like questing, which causes you to just pause and to reflect on what does that question mean. And that person, when I spoke back and said, why do you care, you know,
I can just imagine the reaction.
They were wide-eyed and they leaned back, you know? They had to live with that for a while to figure out how to respond to that.
Right? Yeah. Okay, take us into the room for a moment. Right. What is it like in a brain spotting session? What are people likely to expect?
So in the therapy room, if we're just going to do straight brain spotting, okay? Mm-hmm. So a person comes in and I might ask them, you know, after all the, you know, in politeness of how the week has been, et cetera, et cetera. What would you like to work on today? Mm. And they'll bring an issue. And as they're talking about the issue, there's a number of things that might happen, but I will ask them at some point because I'm watching them somatically. I'm looking for what's going on, changes in color. The face has got a lot of muscles in it, all these little ticks and tricks that are going on. Mm-hmm. And I might then ask them and say, as you're talking to me right now, are you activated? And they'll say, yeah. And I'll ask them, how activated are you? So we use the suds, 0 to 10. And they'll go 8. And even that, we don't even, the subjective units of distress. 8 for somebody is 4 for somebody else. It's just a number. It's just a starting point. You know, it's just, we're taking the temperature of the room.
Yeah.
And I said, where do you notice it in your body? And they'll describe for me where they notice it. And it may be, you know, let's say their throat is constricted.
Mm.
You go, okay. And then I might bring my, there's a lot of different setups, but let's just do a basic setup. I'll bring my pointer out and I will bring it, first of all, to three different locations in their field of vision. First to the left, to the middle, to the right. I'm trying to find out which part of the room is associated to the throat.
Right.
And they know.
Mm.
They know. So it's like, you know, I'll say, does it increase when you look here? Does your throat, the sensation that you're experiencing in your throat, does it increase when you look over here? They may say, I'm not sure. And I go, okay, let's go over here, which is now in the middle of the room. And they'll go, I think it's increasing. And what about over here? Oh, that's a lot. Is it tolerable? Yes, it is. And then I do some refining.
Mm.
So I'm looking for the highest, this is if I'm doing activation. I'm looking for the highest activation here within their window of tolerance, right? Mm. And once we find the place, the brain spot in their field of vision, I will be holding the pointer while they mindfully focus on both their throat. It's not the issue anymore.
Mm.
And that point in their field of vision.
Mm.
Now, what happens at this point? They can talk, they don't talk. I don't talk. I don't want to interfere with the process. So I'm not going to ask them, you know, too many questions. I could be checking in on them.
Yeah.
I might, every so often, I might do something like, you know, what are you noticing now?
Mm.
And if I see that they're struggling to talk because they're so subcortical that, you know, they're trying to move their lips, I say, it's okay, just stay there.
Yeah.
Right. But I'm now attuning with them. So what it may look like is that a person is looking at a pointer and the other person is looking at the person.
Right? Yeah.
And no talking is taking place.
Right.
That can happen. No talking can take place for 30 minutes, 40 minutes, right? And I'll check in from time to time. And the last thing that I will do is because, you know, we're limited by the session hour, right? Mm-hmm. As I'm coming to the end of the session, I will ask them, what happens now when you think about the issue?
Mm.
Generally speaking, this is what happens. They'll do this. You can see my eyes are moving around the room. That's what they're doing. Their eyes are moving around the room and then they're going, what was the issue again?
Oh, wow.
I know. And so I might just say one word because I'm trying to get them to something about, you know, your boss. Oh, yeah. Oh, I don't give a shit. I go, okay. I don't even accept that.
Yeah.
So I might say to them, where's your suds at now? Might be a 2. I'll go, let's keep going. We want to really go underneath that iceberg.
Okay.
Right. We want to go. If they say to me it's 0, we'll go keep going. Or we'll say, let's see if you can activate it again. Okay, I've got it to 1.5. Great. Keep going. And like, because I'm Greek heritage, I can do the Greek melodrama.
Yeah.
You know, boss, you know that. I was going to swear. I don't think I should swear. That blah, 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 blah person who did X, Y, and Z. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
This is to activate them, you know?
Yeah.
So we can have a bit of fun too, you know? Other times a person may actually, you know, and what, sorry, I should say to you too that what could be happening during that session is that there could be twitches and eyes flickering. The shoulder can be kicking. The legs can be kicking. It is working somatically. Right. So this is the processing. This is the processing of the trauma now that I'm describing to you.
Yeah.
And when that occurs, and I check in with, I get the feedback, you know, what was that session like for you? This is that phenomenological part of the research that we do. And I check in with them when they come back in, tell me more about what happens now about this, you know, what this, that, and the other. Now the meaning making and the narrative gets changed, right? And we talk about it. And this is where some of the other processes can come in beautifully as well, like the expressive arts, you know, to do something at that point in time too. But basically, it is so unique. It is so different. There can be tears. There can be laughter. There can be somebody who just will not stop talking. Sometimes if that happens, and I think that they may not be in their body because they may be, it's a distraction for them. I might, if I do a little intervention, it might just be, can you just tell me what's going on with your throat, please?
Yeah.
I might just reorientate them. But we don't really do, and if they say whatever it is that they're saying to me, I don't engage. I go, uh-huh.
It's just acknowledging it.
It's acknowledging and keep going.
Mm.
Acknowledging and keep going. I don't want to engage them, otherwise they're going to get cortical again.
Yeah.
They're going to bring them up to their, you know, neocortex. And now we're not processing.
Yeah. Out of brain into body.
Out of brain into body.
Yeah.
So, it is also great for people who can't feel, because there might be, you know, there might be somebody who might be thinking, well, that was great, that person can feel their body. But we also know that there's a lot of our clients who can't access their body or choose not to access their body. We can still do brain spotting.
Yeah.
Because I will now look for their somatic markers from the outside. And I will pick the brain spot because I've seen something when they've moved their eyes in a particular direction. I'll get them to do mindful processing then. Blind people. There's a blind psychotherapist who does brain spotting.
No, that's incredible.
Yeah, big time. And she also does brain spotting for people who are blind or vision impaired, as well as regular people. So there you go.
That's incredible.
There's no limitations to this modality.
Yeah. Okay, so what is, and I know that you said that you've got multiple, so I'm going to narrow you down to one, but what is one myth or misconception about brain spotting that you want to smash to pieces?
My myths, because I've talked so much about brain spotting and identified so many things already in our chat. For example, that you can be blind, it can be done over the telephone, you know, it can be done, of course, it can be done, you know, via the internet, et cetera. But I want to bust some myths maybe about therapy in general. There is no map to healing, but get as many compasses as you can.
Yeah.
Just something on a positive note. And the other stuff, you know, I've mentioned, we are not experts.
Yeah.
The idea that we're an expert, seriously. But anyway, there is no map to healing. Get as many compasses as you can. And brain spotting is a vital compass to have.
Yeah. And a fascinating compass.
Bloody fascinating.
Yeah, it's so fascinating.
It's going to blow you away. The number of people that it doesn't surprise me anymore. You know, I run these free intros to brain spotting, right? And recently I had somebody just from the January one write in to say to me, because I give away a setup. I don't just talk about it to sell brain spotting. I'm less interested in that. I want you to know about it. I really want you to have it in your toolkit, but I'm not here to sell it to you. And I wanted to give away a setup so people can use it for their clients, because we're here to heal clients, right? And this person emailed me a few times saying, I can't believe it. I used it. I used it the very next day. I can't believe what happened. Like it was an email so long, right? And that they didn't even do the training.
Yeah.
And what they're getting from it, and that's just with one very, very simple setup, and what they've seen and how it's helped their clients, that's what I love. I love helping therapists to become who they're meant to be as a therapist, not who they should be, not who they should be, or what somebody suggests to you, you know what you should be. No, it's about who you are, and not to be scared, and to be courageous, and to find out who you are as a therapist, and be that. Because then the people that will come to you authentically for you.
Yep.
And then you get to grow and shine as a therapist. You know?
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. Now, I will have all of the links to your website and to the brain spotting training website.
Training.
In the show notes for people. But I want to quickly ask you to talk about, and I will have the link for this in there as well, is the doco that you were a part of.
Yes. So the BBC produced an observational documentary called Space 22 that was aired on the ABC, which you can still watch on the ABC on, what's it called again?
iView.
Yes, iView. Yeah. I remember the iView. Yeah, it's on iView. And I've got it. I can give you the link for that one. So basically you're following six episodes, I think, and you're following seven participants, all who've got a mental health challenge. Black Dog Institute was involved to do the research behind the scenes. And myself and Nat Basingwaite were on that. We were the hosts, but I'm the therapist. So you get to see me doing therapy. I mean, most of it is on the cutting floor, but apart from that, right, you get to see me working with clients, and what they were experiencing, the whole premise of the observational documentary was, does the creative and expressive arts benefit people in any way? It's not art therapy. It's not art therapy. Just be very clear about that. It's just about whether, if people were to engage with the creative and expressive arts, does it make any difference to their mental health well-being in the same way that exercise, we already know. If you go to, you don't go to an exercise psychotherapist.
I'm sure there probably is one, but it would not be the stock standard. No.
No. So it was, I just want to make that clear, because there'll be some people who may be watching it who are art therapists and curious about what it is that I'm doing. I'm not doing art therapy. I do art as therapy.
Yes, I was about to say, it sounds like what we would say is art as therapy, or music as therapy, or, you know, a play as therapy, as opposed to it being art therapy. It's these modalities being therapeutic.
Correct. Yeah. So you need tissues. This one is a tearjerker, right? Okay. The people on there, and they range from the age of, let me get this right, was it 19 to 66?
Oh, wow.
Right? A very diverse group of individuals. We have become friends, and we still talk with each other, you know, and support each other in different ways. And it was a very, what the way that they filmed it was very respectful, you know. And as an observational documentary, there's no lines given. It's raw.
Yeah.
We just put in a room and, you know, we just started doing stuff, you know. And there was three different artists, Australian artists, that led the art activities. Wendy Sharp, Eddie, on the musical side of things, I wanted to say Eddie Murphy. It's not Eddie.
Oh, Murphy. Eddie Perfect.
Thank you, Eddie Perfect.
Right. Yeah.
And Abdul Abdullah.
Ah. Right?
Beautiful. Three beautiful artists who just brought something to these participants to explore.
Yeah. I mean, okay, this episode is just like full of fascinations. I mean, people have just got, it's so many fascinations. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Sam.
It's been amazing.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. And you're fun to speak with, you know. Oh, I enjoy your energy here. Yeah, and you. Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks, Nola.
You're welcome.
As we come to the end of the final episode of Inside the Therapy Room, I want to thank each and every one of you for tuning in and for the wonderful therapists who have joined me along the way. I hope you have loved learning about the vastness there is within the therapy world. If you would like to stay connected, you can find me on all of the socials as at Anchored Counselling Services. And if you don't know, I have another podcast titled Beyond the Surface, where I amplify stories of religious trauma and deconstruction. I would love for you to tune in if you're interested. For the last time, thanks for joining us inside the therapy room.